This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I do actually have a little work to do tomorrow. But, you know, I do this on Thursday, so it's not actually the last day of work for me for a while. In fact, for a while here, I probably will be coming in on Thursdays. One of the amazing people who has worked as an employee for my client for 35 years and worked in the IT department, he's approaching retirement, and so there have been some goals that he has had to get done, and we're not quite there. We've got a lot of pieces still in play. And so while I don't usually come in on Fridays, they're actually checking with the bosses. I volunteered today and said, look, I know we've got a lot of stuff we want to get done. And if you all want me to start coming in on Fridays, I can come in on Fridays for a little bit. So we may start doing that just as a way to maybe get a little closer. Sorry, I'm putting away my gum, which is what that crinkling noise is. We might get a little closer before he retires to actually having some of these things done. So I may be coming in tomorrow for a few hours. It's been a good week. There's been plenty of stressors this week. I think I mentioned last week about a big report that we had done. It's very, very interesting. Just in the encountering of life and moving through life, to experience things and to realize, I think I mentioned last week, that you can't really solve a problem until it occurs. And the flesh's job seems to be to get you all stirred up about problems that haven't even happened yet, so that you spend a lot of time distracted and not really focusing on your energy on the things that you can be doing as opposed to the things you have no control over. It was interesting. I think it was Tuesday before I went home, a guy that I work with walked over and he said, well, Phil, it's always interesting when you get these phone calls just before you go home. It's raining here a little bit, which is the reason the windshield wipers are going. He said, we got a call. And there was a call from one of the churches we sent this report to, and the church says that we sent them last year's data, we didn't send them this year's data. Well, of course, alarm bells are going off, because there's in excess of 12,000 churches that we sent this report to, and if we sent them the wrong report, this would be bad. And so I went and rechecked my stuff and checked the files that we had spooled to the printer, and everything looked good, and told my buddy, it looks good to me, and then got home, and the other guy that we could have checked with, he'd already gone home for the day, and so we couldn't get in touch with him, and so I headed home, and I had some things I had planned to do, but I just decided, you know what, you need to get on the Nordic track, gotta flush out some of this stress out of your system, so got on the Nordic track, dinked around with a few things, got up the next day, went in. Had a conversation with the guy who actually printed the file down on the major printers, and he was saying, no, that's the file I printed. He looked through it. Yeah, it's good. No problem. And then we did get in contact with another church, and they said, no, we've got the right data. We don't know what they're talking about. And I told everyone before we heard from the other church, I said, before we get ourselves too worked up about this, we need to understand that we sent this report out to 12,500 churches, approximately. Whoops, that's my water bottle's gone over. 12,500 churches. And I said, you have to understand that within 12,500 churches, there's going to be some treasurers that are having a bad day. There's going to be some treasurers that are stressed out from other things. And it's going to be easy for them to get confused. And I reminded them that we had actually gotten a call the year before from a church. And they said, you didn't send me data for 2008. You sent me data for 2007. I said, you know, we got that call last year. We found that wasn't true. I said, I think what we're going to find now that we've rechecked everything, that this one's not really true either, or somewhere in the communication lines, something got crossed. But, you know, it's just kind of human nature sometimes that, especially if we're a part of a big hierarchy, that when we come up against something that we don't understand, a lot of times the easiest place for us to run is, well, obviously those people above me have screwed something up and this is their fault. It's not that I've misplaced it or I've, you know, because that's human nature. We do that. When something doesn't make sense to us, we figure out how it's got to be someone else's fault. Unfortunately, sometimes we do that. And I think in my case, what I try to do when I have that inkling to run that direction, I just say, whoa, 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 back up, just stop, breathe a minute, look around, see what there is to see. Maybe it's something you've done. Try to knock that out first. And it's just interesting because when you get a phone call like that, you really have to pay attention to it. I mean, because if it was true that we had sent out the wrong year's worth of data, we were going to have a lot of printing to do and a lot of postage costs and yada, yada, yada. So, and it's a time-sensitive report because the churches have to get it so that they can respond back by the end of January. And so, you know, there was a lot of those kind of stressors. So it was a little interesting at a few times this week. The other thing that I thought was interesting as well was this response of some of the media to the recovery and relief effort in Haiti. I was listening, I think it was probably Tuesday, and I was really thinking in this vein, or Wednesday, I think it was Tuesday. They were talking to a reporter, and the people who were back in New York wanted to know. Now, you know, there have been a lot of reports that the aid isn't flowing as fast as it could. And is that what you're seeing down there? You know, do you feel like the aid could be getting out faster and faster? And I really appreciated the reporter who was down there. And he said, oh, yeah, well, he said, you have to understand the situation is really difficult down here. And he said, you know, maybe there's some things that they could have done different, but everyone is... they're trying to get this aid out as quickly as possible. And I thought at the time, it's always easy to look at somebody else's job and figure out how they could do their job better. How my life would be better if you just do your job better. But what we have to understand is that every job has its own unique challenges. And it's highly likely that we have no idea what those challenges are. And so bear that in mind too. If your flesh is trying to tell you, you know, if so-and-so would just do this, then you'd be able to do that and life would be better. And why don't they, you know, get going and get it done? And you should just drop back and say, well, I'm not really sure all the things they're dealing with in their job. And I'm going to do what I can to create an environment of my success for myself, but I'm also going to do what I can to create an environment of success for them. And so if that means giving them a little space and saying, look, I know you have a lot of things going right now. Can I assist? Is there anything I can do? And just believe that they are trying to make their best effort. Now, you might have, from a lot of experience, the idea that people aren't doing the best job they can do, but, you know, you haranguing them about it since you're not their boss probably is not going to do any good. So you should just be a little patient and maybe try to encourage them a little bit and see where things go from there. While we are on the topic of Haiti, I debated whether to say anything. And enough of it has passed now that maybe it's not necessary, but I would like to go on record and say that I do not believe that this earthquake is the result of God's judgment on Haiti. I believe that the devastation of this earthquake has a very simple and understandable cause. The world is a dangerous place. We have earthquakes here and volcanic activity. The earth has a molten core. There's going to be earthquakes. There's going to be volcanic eruptions. And the sad fact is, Haiti is on a fault line. And the even sadder facts are that Haiti has had a series of dictators who have not looked to the good of the populace, but they have looked instead to their own good and taking their own aid and those types of things and using it for their own self-aggrandizement and neglected their people. When you read about the statistics on Haiti, even before the earthquake, it's really sad. I was hearing about it. It was something like, they don't know exactly what the unemployment rate was in Haiti, but they estimated someplace between 70 and 80%. And that in the list of living conditions and industrialization of nations, Haiti was something like 149th out of 182 or something like that. They're like right next to Sudan. I mean, these poor people living in this country. So you have this very poor country, and it's on a fault line, and their dictators are not looking out for the people, and there's no building codes. And that's why this disaster came. It wasn't the judgment of God. It was simply the result of a sequence of circumstances. And so, I don't think anything is gained by standing up and saying, see, God's after them. God is not after them. God loves the people of Haiti. And he is just as heartbroken and sorrowful as the rest of us over what's happening in Haiti. And hopefully, maybe, out of this, the people of Haiti will decide that they need a new kind of government. Because as we talked about many, many weeks ago, when I did the talks about why is there evil in the world and what part does will play in it, the ability to choose. The fact is that every country has the type of government that its people acquiesce to. Now, maybe people are acquiescing to it because they're afraid, but that doesn't change the fact that they're choosing to do nothing. If we learned anything from the Soviet countries, we learned that when the people decide that they want a new form of government, there are not enough military people and police force people available to stop it. So, you know, maybe out of all this, the people of Haiti will say, this isn't what we want. And maybe, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I just hope that beyond just taking care of the immediate relief and medical aids, that there is some effort, either by the United Nations or perhaps the U.S., although we're a little overextended, but to actually try to help rebuild Haiti, because it is going to be needed. And I am like only about 7 minutes from home, and I haven't actually even started the actual topic, so I have to get onto that so we can get onto other things. And I forgot to say that this is episode 44. Episode 44, not counting this one. We are eight away from being 1 year. So anyways, this week, I watched 2020, the television show on January the 8th, and I was amazed. And I bring this up simply because if any of you have not heard of this young woman, you should go read about her story. And if you are so inclined, you should donate to her fund. Her name is Katie Piper. And Katie Piper has been through an experience that I would wish on no one. But the amazing thing is Katie Piper has actually come out of the experience on the other side strong. And I think it's a testament to the power of the human will. Katie Piper moved to London when she was a young lady, very attractive young lady, had done some modeling work, was working on a shopping channel as a hostess, had done some work as a ring girl, you know, the scantily clad little girls that walk around in martial arts tournaments with the little signs that say round one, round two. Katie Piper's life revolved around her looks. She became acquainted with a young man who was a martial arts guy. They dated for a couple of weeks, and where he first started out as very attentive, he quickly became very controlling. Things came to a critical moment when they had rented a hotel room, and at the last minute, Katie had decided that she didn't want to sleep with him, and he became enraged and beat her unconscious and raped her, and then kept her in this hotel room for hours, telling her, if you tell anybody about this, I'm going to kill you, yada, 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 yada. Basically pummeling her and intimidating her until she came to the point where she believed that she did not have a choice and she no longer had the will to exercise her free will. And she convinced him that she wouldn't say anything about it. So she gets away from him. She holes up in her apartment for several days. He's calling, he's texting, she's not responding. Finally, she responds and he tells her, I've written you a letter on Facebook. If you'll just go and read it, you never have to talk to me again. She decides she's going to do that. She throws on some clothes because she doesn't have a computer in her apartment, so she's going to a little internet cafe across the street. This is in London. She comes down to the street. She's talking to the guy. He's saying, are you going to go read it now? Are you going to go read it? She asks, yes, I am. Well, what kind of clothes are you wearing? And how's your hair done? And she's describing to him, well, you know, I've got this on and my hair's just up. You know, I haven't had a shower for 3 days. Of course it's up, that kind of stuff. Unbeknownst to her, she is describing how she's looked so that he can relay the information to an accomplice. And the accomplice walks up to her on the street with a coffee cup filled with sulfuric acid and throws it in her face. Now, as I said at the beginning, this is an experience that I would wish on no one because it's a horrific experience. And I will not go into graphic detail about her descriptions. You can find rebroadcasts, I'm sure, of 2020. You can find stories on her. Again, her name is Katie Piper. But if you just put into Google young model burned with acid or something like that, you'll come up with it. And my goal in telling you about her is not to necessarily rehearse what she's been through so much as to talk about what the experience has brought her to. Her recovery was long and difficult. The plastic surgeon, when they talked to him on 2020 and they asked him, what did you think? And he basically said, I thought, what are we going to do with this girl? He had no idea. They tried some experimental things that were successful. It was really a horrific, horrific thing. And there came a point, I'm getting my mail, one moment, when her mother was reading the things that Katie was writing because she couldn't talk because some of the acid went down her throat and so it burned her. And so there was, she couldn't talk for a while. And so, just a second, I have a package. Oh, Amazon. I have two packages. Just a moment. What is this one? Might be something that my beloved has ordered. Anyway, so there was, I mean, she couldn't talk. And so her mother was having to just read whatever Katie wrote down and when she'd ask for things. And there was a really heartbreaking moment in the show because at one point her mother reported that Katie had written, "Kill me, just kill me." And her mom said, "You know, I couldn't read that." And she said, "I just had to walk out of the room." She said, "There was a nurse there that took over for me for a while." And so certainly this young lady went through the absolute depths that you can go through as a human being. But there were two key things that I took out of watching this interview. And the first one was that after she had spent months in the hospital with reconstructive surgery, I'm backing into my garage. After she had spent months in the hospital, there came the day when she was going to leave the hospital. And she was getting ready to leave, and of course, that has its own share of anxieties. And she's getting ready to go home, and she said as she was getting ready to leave the hospital, she had a thought. Let me get my notes here because I'm in the garage now. She said she was praying and talking to God, and she said, "I remember thinking to myself," and see, to me, when I hear that phrase, "I remember thinking to myself," I think that's a whisper. Because sometimes what God does is he whispers into our spirit, and it's quiet enough that we don't realize that it's actually originating from him. And we think it's just us. But what has really spawned it is that little nudge from him. I remember thinking to myself, "I've got the choice to continue to let them take everything away from me, from behind bars for the rest of my life, or I can stand up against these cowards and make my own destiny and my own journey. Because they had me for these two attacks, but that was all they were going to get from me." Now, see, that to me is just an amazing thing. You know, we talked last week about what makes us human. And to me, to go through what she had gone through, to be in the depths of despair that she had been in the incredible pain that she had been in, all the things that she had endured, and yet be able in a moment to have this realization and have this ability to stand up again. That's an amazing, amazing thing that to me just points out again the resilience of the human spirit. And I think that's very, very cool. The upshot of all of it is that by the time you get to the end of the report, she's still very scarred. She'll live with that the rest of her life. But she smiles. She smiles a lot, which is very cool to see. When she was first brought to the hospital, they brought in her parents, and the father was asked, "Is this your daughter?" And he said, "I remember standing there thinking, I don't know." Because the damage had been so extensive, there just wasn't anything that was recognizable. And at the end of the episode of 2020, the reporter asked the father, "When you look at your daughter, what do you see now?" And he said, "I don't see her face. I see her. I see what's inside her." And her mom said, "I just see her enormous, wide smile." Because as you watch this young lady towards the end of the episode, you can really see there's a joy in her despite everything she's been through. despite the efforts of this young man and his accomplice to destroy her. She lives, and she has joy. In fact, she talked towards the end of the episode about the fact that her life before was very self-obsessed. She said, I was the most important thing in my life. Always something, but there was always something that was missing. There was always something in my life that was missing, and I never knew what that hole was. And she said, after I found a faith and I've learned to believe in God and I started to pray and that void has been filled. So I feel more enriched in that way through this experience. I think it's taught me, and she said, I don't want to be cliche or mean this to be cheesy, but it's taught me that looks aren't everything. And one of the little sayings that I have had that I tell people, especially if they're expressing some dissatisfaction with body type or their hair or their clothes or those types of things, I usually look at them and smile and I say, you know what? Joy is the greatest adornment of your life. And that's really true. You know, I'm not trying to be critical, but it seems to me that there are many, many people in the world who spend a whole lot of time trying to come up with just the right look, just the right image, right clothes, right shoes. And all of that's fine. But, you know, that time and that money could be spent on your quest and your epic. And, you know, a shower, some deodorant, you're good to go. You know, spend your time on things that will enrich your soul. Spend your time on things that will enrich the people around you. And that's the really cool thing about this whole experience that Katie Piper has been through. Now, she wants to help other burn victims, and in fact has set up a fund, the Katie Piper Fund, and what she's hoping to do is raise enough money so she can open a burn unit in London to care for those who have been through similar experiences, for those who have been burned, because she knows firsthand the agony of that, and she wants to help others get through it. And I think that's fabulous. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.